Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, October 21st. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, excessive Arcata police arrest spurs calls for action. Silent vigil at Congressman Huffman's Eureka office demands ceasefire and arms embargo. And our nonpartisan guide to California's ballot propositions. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Arcata police are being accused of excessive force, and the city council has fielded a lot of public comment about it. KMUD's Daniel Mintz reports.
The police arrest of a young black man on the Arcata Plaza has drawn intense concern among community members, and a city council member has pledged to pursue formation of a police oversight committee. Objections to the way police carried out the arrest dominated the public comment period of the October 16th Arcata City Council meeting. The controversy stems from a police response to the plaza on October 8th, when 21-year-old Arcata resident Michael Steelman was using a barbecue. According to an Arcata Police Department press release, Steelman said he intended to sell food and became, quote, increasingly agitated when told what he was doing was illegal without a permit. The press release said Steelman refused to cooperate and, quote, violently resisted arrest. In an incident witnessed by multiple people, Steelman was forced to the ground by multiple officers and charged with felony and misdemeanor counts of resisting arrest. But those who witnessed it or saw footage of it described the police response as blatantly excessive, including Arcata resident Alice Feynman.
Last Tuesday, my children and I witnessed a local business owner on the plaza flag down the community outreach officer, point toward a chimney of coals on the concrete next to an empty barbecue where a beloved black community member was using the plaza for what it should be used for, community connection and support. This business owner pointed Mike out and then went back into their business because customers were waiting. Your business owners put their profit over the sanctity of black, brown, and indigenous bodies. Your law enforcement, instead of honoring the work this individual community member has done for all of us, chose to react and escalate what was a calm situation. You say the police are here to protect and serve, but my children did not witness this. They witnessed the most heinous and terrifying brutality of their lives, and it was nothing compared to the trauma, violence, and injustice Mike and other black bodies went through on this night.
Thank you for your comment. Thank you. That was your 2 minutes. Thank you.
Another speaker was among several who said what happened is indicative of a pervasive problem.
Can you not see the gross hypocrisy in this? Can you not see the abhorrent racism in this? Can you not see the prejudice doesn't stop at the police? It's deeply seated in this sick community rife with privilege who are too comfortable turning a blind eye. Do you turn a blind eye? Do you turn a blind eye, council members? You wonder why Cal Poly's enrollment is at an all-time low? You cannot protect black bodies in this community. I'm from this community. I've never felt safe here. Never. My entire life. And that is a shame. Wow. It is a shame that you were ever given the title of a progressive community. Under your tattered Bernie Sanders shirts, your white robes are showing. We feel your white supremacy. What are you going to do about this?
Dr. Kinte Johnson, who is co-chair of Equity Arcata, said he'll bring the issue of excessive force to the group at its next meeting. Councilmember Sarah Schaefer said the incident is being felt in the community, and she's troubled by it. She talked about how she'll respond to it.
You know, the business owners have come to us. They want us to, you know, get people off the plaza, clean up the plaza, get the dogs off the plaza, get people to stop drinking, stop smoking. But I don't think that this is what business owners meant or wanted to see. And I know that many of us have had the opportunity to watch the body camera footage, and I know that that will be available in the public record soon enough. And I thought it would make me feel better maybe, and it did not. And so some asks that I want to make of this council, and at least to agenda is at a future meeting or talk about at a future meeting. We have a public safety committee that is non-operational and doesn't have enough people on it and doesn't have direction. And I've been looking into and researching models, Santa Barbara, Ann Arbor, Michigan, San Francisco, that have police oversight committees in smaller towns, in larger towns, and it works. And I think that like to bridge this community with policing, right? Like we want to have community policing, but that's not what's happening. That we need to at least have some overhaul of what our public safety committee does or what advising they do. And I think that like agendizing the idea of having a police oversight committee, and if this council is interested in exploring that, is the like absolute bare minimum that we can do in response to what happened on Tuesday.
As audience members shouted, Schaefer added that the controversy can lead the police department to, quote, engage with the black community. She said she plans to write a letter to the district attorney demanding the charges be dropped. Also at the meeting, several residents asked the council to pursue a sister city relationship with Gaza City in Gaza. They said doing so can spur local action, including efforts to bring more aid to Gaza City residents. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
A silent vigil was held at Congressman Huffman's Eureka office last Wednesday, where participants called for a ceasefire and an arms embargo on Israel. The group reflected on the 16,000 children who have lost their lives, with the 2-hour and 12-minute vigil symbolizing a half second of silence for each child lost in the past year, underscoring the magnitude of the tragedy and the urgent need for international action. KMUD's Ryan Hudson spoke with Southern Humboldt peace activists who organized the event, including Roby Tenario and Jane Lapiner.
Last week, we caught up with local anti-war activists who held a ceasefire rally and vigil in Eureka, protesting the ongoing bombardment of Gaza by the State of Israel. Dozens of members of the Humboldt Committee for Peace and Justice held a silent vigil that ultimately ended up on the doorstep of Congressman Jared Huffman's office in Eureka. Connected by a large red rope decorated with the paper silhouettes of children, a line of silent activists marched through Eureka somberly for exactly 2 hours and 12 minutes, symbolic of the thousands of children who have been identified as killed in the war so far. Although Congressman Huffman was not available for the somber demonstration at his office, a representative delivered a letter to the group from Huffman in lieu of his appearance, and stood by listening to grievances expressed by the crowd in front of media and cameras.
Well, I really appreciated that he did respond, and I really appreciated that he expressed his remorse at the loss of life and destruction in Gaza, but I was extremely saddened by his continued push for supplying more support for Israel. I think at this point, Israel has proven that this is not a defensive war, and what we need to stop supplying them with more money and more weapons, because right now, recently, they have started targeting the UN peacekeepers. They've gone rogue, and I think the rest of the world, specifically the European Union, is seeing this, and they have called the countries of France and Ireland, and now Spain are calling for this stopping to fund Israel. And the United States has sent 2,000 bombs to Israel. I don't see how that's defense.
The 2,000-pound bunker buster bombs.
Yeah, I don't see how that's a defensive weapon. And I think we can see with over 16,000 children dead, 30 out of 36 hospitals gone, all the universities are gone. The place has been
in the hospitals.
Yes, they're very, very, very decimated area now, and
that was very good.
We need to focus on building towards peace and not mm-hmm. continue this.
And to me, the ultimate, since we've been planning this, now they are targeting children. They're not just supposedly dying as collateral damage. They're targeting them in the heart and the brain. Snipers are killing children.
Several members of the group expressed disapproval of Huffman's letter, noting specifically that the congressman did not appear willing to recognize Israel's conduct as including war crimes as described by members of the group, although he does say that Netanyahu's government's actions sometimes are indiscriminate or too reckless. Specifically, in Huffman's letter, he states that he agrees that Israel has the right to protect itself and also writes, quote, "Those who seek peace and reconciliation must not pretend that everything is Israel's fault," unquote. While clearly supporting Israel in its ongoing war, Huffman also acknowledges his own, quote, distress and, quote, dismay over the horrific suffering and loss of life we continue to see on all sides, unquote.
But what we're talking about is to stop the killing, maiming, starving, terrorizing of an entire population.
Who cannot escape? That's the other thing that makes this different than any other genocide. These people are trapped, and they cannot escape.
It's important to actually think about that word.
Yeah.
Because it is an occupied land, and I don't believe that in the field of war and world politics that you're supposed to attack an occupied people. I think there, when you occupy a country, you're supposed to care for and be responsible for the safety and feeding and schooling of the people.
Well, how do you feel about the turnout today?
Fabulous, fabulous.
Yeah, I'm very happy. We didn't know what to expect.
I was really moved at the willingness for people to give up their day and to contemplate so deeply the horror and tragedy that we're all witnessing. And there was a young woman who came out of an office very nicely dressed and said, "Oh my God, you've restored my faith in humanity." I think we're all so shocked at what's going on. We don't know what to do.
But I think this has been a good start.
It's a good start. Yes, this is not the end, this is the beginning, and we expect the United States to stop arming and supplying Israel with weapons.
Immediately. Yesterday.
Yes, thank you.
For more information or how to get involved with the Humboldt Committee for Peace and Justice, they do have a website, and you can also email them at humboldtpeacecomm@gmail.com. For KMUD News, this is Ryan Hudson.
Californians are voting on 10 statewide ballot propositions this election cycle. And KMUD News is teaming up with CalMatters to provide a nonpartisan overview. If you haven't already voted, grab a pen and paper to take notes. Proposition 2 would let California borrow $10 billion through a state bond to pay for updates to school facilities. Carolyn Jones, with our California newsroom partner, CalMatters, has this explainer.
If Prop 2 passes, it would pay for repairs and upgrades at thousands of K-12 schools and community colleges across California. Research shows that nearly 40% of California students attend schools that don't meet the state's minimum safety standards. That means everything from leaky roofs and peeling paint to broken air conditioners and other hazards. The state school repair fund, which hasn't been replenished since 2016, is now nearly empty. And local and state bonds like Prop 2 are the sole source of money for the fund. Supporters say this money is crucial to fixing California's crumbling schools. Opponents say the state should make school repairs a part of its regular budget instead of depending on taxpayers.
Proposition 3 would enshrine the right to same-sex marriage in the California Constitution. Yoa Stella Yo from our news partner CalMatters shares this explainer.
While same-sex marriage has been legal in California for more than a decade, the state constitution still says it's prohibited. That's because of another proposition, Prop 8. Back in 2008, California voters approved that measure, which defined marriage as strictly between a man and a woman. When the U.S. Supreme Court legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, Prop 8 became a zombie law, virtually unenforceable, but still on the books. Proposition 3 on this year's ballot would officially repeal the zombie law, on top of making same-sex marriage a constitutional right. Supporters say this will give extra protection to same-sex marriage in California in case the U.S. Supreme Court outlaws it in the future. Opponents say the measure goes too far and would override marriage laws in the state.
Proposition 4 would fund projects across the state to help protect Californians from the risks and impacts of climate change. We go to Alejandro Lazo.
Prop 4 would let California borrow $10 billion through state bonds to pay for climate and environmental projects. Just under $4 billion of that would go to provide safe drinking water and protect people from floods and droughts. Another nearly $2 billion would go to wildfire prevention and extreme heat projects. The measure would also fund parks and wildlife, coastal protection, and clean energy efforts. Taxpayers would pay back the bonds with interest, so the measure could end up costing Californians as much as $16 billion, according to a legislative analysis. Supporters say we need to act now because the threats of climate change are too urgent. Opponents say the state should not take on new debt to pay for these projects.
Proposition 5 would lower the threshold of voter support required to pass certain local bond measures. We go to Mary Franklin Harvin with CalMatters.
Right now, any city or county bond measure on the ballot must get support from at least two-thirds, meaning more than 66%, of voters to pass. That threshold would drop to 55% for some bonds if Prop 5 passes. The new rules would apply to bonds to fund affordable housing and public infrastructure projects, like hospitals, parks, and broadband networks. Supporters say lowering the threshold makes it easier for local governments to fund their own priorities without having to wait for state or federal funding. Opponents say passing bonds with a lower proportion of voters makes it more likely people who didn't vote for a project might have to pay for it. That's because the money for local bonds often comes from increasing property taxes.
Proposition 6 would end California's practice of forcing incarcerated people to work. Wendy Fry shared this explainer.
California's constitution bans all but one form of slavery, forced labor in prisons and jails. If Prop 6 passes, it would amend the constitution so the state can't order an inmate to work and can't punish them for refusing a work assignment. California prisons hand out about 65,000 of these work assignments every year, according to recent state data. Many prisoners working these jobs earn less than 74 cents an hour. Prop 6 would give incarcerated people the option to work. The measure doesn't include requirements about pay, but it makes clear prisoners could earn credits to take time off their sentences. Prop 6 is backed by the state's Reparations Task Force, a group designated to repair the damage of slavery and racism for Black Californians. There is no registered opposition to the measure.
Proposition 32 would mandate a higher statewide minimum wage. Jeannie Quaange shares more.
Prop 32 would raise the state minimum wage from $16 to $18 an hour starting in January. Some Californians already live in places where $18 or more is the standard, including San Francisco, Emeryville, and West Hollywood. But the statewide minimum wage lags behind. Labor unions and advocates say Prop 32 could boost pay for about 2 million workers when the cost of living has skyrocketed. The MIT Living Wage Calculator says the average single Californian with no kids would need to make more than $27 an hour to afford basic needs. But some business groups and restaurant and grocery store owners say they'll have to cut workers' hours or raise prices if Prop 32 passes.
Proposition 33 would let cities remove current limits on rent control. Marisa Kendall with CalMatters shared the details.
Many cities, including San Francisco and Los Angeles, limit the amount a landlord can raise the rent each year, aka rent control. But a decades-old law exempts single-family homes and apartments built after 1995. It also allows landlords to set their own rental rates when new tenants move in. Prop 33 would change that. If the measure passes, cities would be allowed to control rents on any type of housing and for new tenants. Supporters say Prop 33 will help keep rents down at a time when the state is in a housing crisis. Opponents say the measure will discourage developers from building more housing, and that supply gap will actually drive up rents. Two similar measures have been on recent ballots. Both failed.
Proposition 34 would require some California health providers to use profits from prescription drug sales to directly fund patient care. CalMatters' Mary Franklin Harvin explains.
Federal law lets healthcare providers who serve low-income and at-risk patients buy prescription drugs at a discount and then sell them at retail rates. Providers are supposed to put the profits from those sales toward expanding patient services, but there's some leeway on that spending. Prop 34 would change that by requiring certain providers to spend at least 98% of that money directly on patient care. The proposition seems to target only one organization, the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, a group that spent tens of millions to influence state and local housing policies. Supporters say money generated from federal discounts should go to help patients and not be diverted to political pursuits. Opponents say this is a political hit job, paid for by the landlord lobby that sees the AIDS Healthcare Foundation as a threat.
Proposition 35 would put new guidelines around Medi-Cal spending to help secure better pay for doctors who serve low-income Californians. Kristen Wong with CalMatters has this explainer.
Prop 35 would require the state to use money from a tax on health insurance plans to boost payments to doctors who serve Medi-Cal patients. Over the last few years, the state has expanded Medi-Cal to cover more Californians than ever, now around 14 million people. But the amount that doctors get paid to treat Medi-Cal patients has not kept up with inflation. And as a result, many providers won't treat them, according to the California Healthcare Foundation. Supporters say Prop 35 will encourage doctors to serve more low-income patients because they'd be getting paid more for their services. Opponents worry putting restrictions on how the state spends this money could mean cuts to other Medi-Cal programs.
Proposition 36 would enforce harsher penalties for certain crimes to address concerns about shoplifting and drug possession. Nigel Duwara with CalMatters shared these details.
If Prop 36 passes, people could be charged with a felony for stealing or getting caught with hard drugs if they already have two prior theft or drug convictions. The proposition would also give people the option to complete drug treatment instead of going to prison. Prop 36 would roll back a decade-old law that reduced penalties for certain theft and drug crimes. Prosecutors, police, and big box retailers now blame these reduced penalties for an increase in shoplifting and other theft, and say ramping penalties back up will discourage more people from stealing. They also say Prop 36 will help combat homelessness by offering unhoused people who get caught with drugs the option to pursue treatment instead of going to prison. Opponents say that no studies on criminal justice or homelessness support the idea that harsher punishments prevent crime or get people off the street.
For more in-depth coverage, you can visit calmatters.org. Stay tuned for local county measure coverage coming later this week. We now turn to Ray Hamill, who brings us all the details of the latest local sports news.
Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. Looking at big local sports stories of the week, including all the latest local high school and college football, some high school soccer and volleyball, and how one South Fork team is enjoying a breakout season of sorts. But first up, the biggest game of the local high school football season will take place on Friday night when the Arcata Tigers host the Ferndale Wildcats in their homecoming game, which will be held at McKinleyville High School. Both teams are 6-0 on the season, and both are 2-0 in the Little Four after convincing wins for each school over the past 2 weeks of conference play. Last weekend, the Tigers travelled to Hoopa and came away with a 41-6 victory, while the Wildcats played at McKinleyville and won comfortably 56-0. The two teams are not just the last two remaining undefeated teams in the HDNL right now, but they are also the top two ranked teams in the league, according to popular sports website maxpreps.com. Friday's game is scheduled for 7:30 p.m. and will be the first of two meetings between the two schools over the final 4 weeks of the regular season, as each looks to secure a conference championship and the guaranteed home North Coast Section playoff game that goes with it. Arcata will travel to Ferndale on Saturday, November the 9th for an afternoon showdown that looks likely to determine this year's conference championship. 8 of the 9 HDNL football teams were in action last weekend. The St. Bernard's Crusaders opened a 2-game road trip in Tennessee with a 23-10 win over Grace Baptist Academy, and they improved to 5-1 on the season. The Eureka Loggers also were in action and came away from Biggs High School with a very impressive 43-0 win. The victory was the second in 4 games for an improving Loggers team, which had previously lost 15 straight games dating back to 2022. With the win, the Loggers improved to 2-4 on the season. Also last weekend, the Fortuna Huskies lost for the 4th straight weekend, falling 32-28 to Silverado High in Victorville and dropping to 2-5 on the season. The South Fork Cubs also lost a close one last week, playing for the first time in 3 weekends and falling 44-42 to Roseland Prep. The Cubs remain winless on the season at 0-4. 8 of the 9 HDNL varsity teams will be in action again this weekend. In addition to the big showdown between Ferndale and Arcata, Eureka will try to keep rolling when the Loggers travel to Crescent City to play a non-conference game against the Del Norte Warriors, who had a bye last week and are 4-2 in the season after winning 3 straight games. In the Little Four, Hoopa will play at McKinleyville on Saturday night as both schools look to secure their first conference win. Hoopa is now 0-2 in the Little Four and 2-4 on the season, while McKinleyville has lost 17 straight games and is also 0-2 in the Little Four and 0-6 on the season. The South Fork Cubs will try to get their first win on Saturday afternoon when they host Branson in Miranda, with kickoff set for 1 p.m. In Mendocino County, meanwhile, Willits won for the 5th straight weekend with a comfortable 48-6 victory over Cloverdale, and the Wolverines are now 6-1. Willits will be back in action on Friday night at Kelseyville and will be tested against the 5-1 Knights. Fort Bragg had a bye last week, but the 3-3 Timberwolves will be back in action on Friday night when they travel to play at Upper Lake. The Ukiah Wildcats also played last weekend, beating Montgomery 34-7. The 4-2 Wildcats will try to make it 3 straight wins when they play at Santa Rosa. In local college football, meanwhile, College of the Redwoods improved to 5-1 on the season and 2-0 in the American Pacific 7 Conference with a comfortable 44-31 win at Las Medanas last weekend. Freshman running back Isaiah Hemmings continued to impress for the Corsairs and scored 3 touchdowns for the 2nd straight week as CR won for the 3rd straight weekend. The Salt Lake City native rushed for 222 yards and 2 touchdowns on 27 carries, and he also had 3 receptions for 28 yards and another touchdown. The Corsairs will have a bye this weekend before playing at Yuba College next week. In local high school soccer, the South Fork girls team is enjoying a breakout season and currently sits 2nd in the Little Four standings, just over halfway through the conference schedule. The Cubs fell 2-0 at St. Bernard's on Wednesday, just a few days after pushing powerhouse Arcata all the way in a 1-goal loss in non-conference action on Saturday. South Fork is 2-2-1 with 5 points in the Little Four and trails only conference leaders Del Norte, which defeated Ferndale 2-0 on Wednesday and is now 4-0-1 with 9 points. After their midweek win, St. Bernard's is now 1-2-2 and sits 3rd in the standings with 4 points, while Ferndale remains winless and is 0-3-2. In HDNL boys soccer, the race for this year's championship looks likely to go down to the final day of action. The Arcata Tigers sit atop the league standings with 8 wins in 9 games, including a 4-2 win over South Fork on Tuesday. Fortuna also won on Tuesday, defeating St. Bernard's 8-0, and the Huskies are second in the standings with a record of 7-2, followed by Del Norte and McKinleyville, who tied each other 1-1 on Tuesday and are now tied for third in the standings, although Del Norte has a game in hand. With 3 games remaining each, Arcata and Fortuna will play each other on the final day of the regular season on October 29th in Fortuna, in a game that could very well decide this year's championship. And finally this week, the St. Bernard's Crusaders secured at least a share of the Little 5 Championship in volleyball with a straight sets win over North Coast Prep on Tuesday. The Crusaders can clinch the pennant outright with a victory over South Fork in their conference finale at St. Bernard's on Tuesday. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Ryan Hudson, Ray Hamill, and our newsroom partners at CalMatters. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.